Music, all housed on the same street in downtown Monticello.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're pleased to open up another month and open up another year with a guy that we like to call...
Another week.
This
is the first week, first work day of the year.
For me, at least. I'm sure there were some other people who actually did, maybe had to work yesterday. But we were lucky enough to get some days off. We appreciate that. And now we're back at it and happy to have Doyle Moore here, the man we like to call our chef in residence. Let me point out, ladies and gentlemen, this is a purely honorary title.
And I actually don't live here.
Not where we live. The rest of us, we have no lives. We live here, but Doyle, he just stops by and visits once a month on the first Wednesday. Has been doing that for a long time, and we talk about food, and we do this by, and when I say we, I mean he picks a topic, and we've talked about a lot of different things. Sometimes a particular dish, and then we say to people, "Well, what's your variation on this? How do you make this, and how do you make it?" Sometimes we've talked about cooking from a particular place in the world, in the United States. We've done a lot of different things, and usually there's some kind of tie to the time of year where we are. And this time around, I think since it is the beginning of the year and it is a time when people make resolutions and sometimes they have to do with food, Doyle said, well, maybe do you have a food-related resolution? Some people, as I said, I think maybe some people have just said, well, I want to be more healthy in 2008, and so I'm going to look at my diet. And maybe also some other folks who, if you just like to cook and you like to spend time in the kitchen, maybe your resolution is that you want to break out of the way that your routine. And I think probably everybody has that. There's a certain number of things that they fall back on that they really like. They're comfort foods, and that's great. But you may also say to yourself, We need to find something different. We should try something different. We should make something different. And then maybe what you'll do is you'll end up finding something that you'll say, boy, this is really great. I like this. And I'll add this to my repertoire. And maybe we'll have that more often. So maybe that would be the case. Or maybe you just like to call up and say hi, you know, whatever. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. And that means that if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number and calls on us. That's 800-222-9455. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana and toll-free 800-222-9455. So was there, in fact, something in particular that got you thinking about this?
Probably it was leftover from last month because it was baking, if you remember, last month.
Yes.
And I got interested in some different things, and so I did give some trial – some trial new baking stuffs, and both things, one of them I have done and one of them I am going to do. So I have my own resolution. Yes, I'm going to make this now,
okay.
What it is. So, that kind of sparked me because I thought, well, that's exactly what I mean. Gee, I'd like to do this. I wonder how to get it done.
Okay.
And I thought maybe some people would have a desire but don't know exactly which way to start and what to do, but they have a desire to make some changes.
Yeah. All right. Well, people have questions, comments, recipe problems. They want to call in and tell us what their food-related resolutions might be. You just go ahead and give us a call.
Or even a new thing that they have done and it does work.
There you go. Yes, maybe that would be the way to do it, to say, you know, something that you recently, you picked up a cookbook, you picked up a magazine, somehow you came across a recipe, you never made that thing before, and you said, all right, I'm going to try this, and it turned out really, really good.
Yes.
Maybe you want to tell us about that. So tell us about what, you know.
Tell you the thing I recently cooked that pleased me a lot. I was making things for Christmas Eve, for after church on Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to make. I made some things and I made some other things, and I wanted something that was kind of sweet. But you know, I have to watch too much sugar, mm-hmm. And so I found a recipe because I like the object, and I was fascinated by the object because I like buying them, but they're so expensive when you buy them, and you buy too many. And so good old Martha had a little recipe for a walnut and brown sugar arugula. Mm-hmm. And I like those very much. They're small. When you're eating one, you aren't eating a whole lot. And so I thought, well, I'll give that a little try. And I tried it, and ooh, it was good. It was really good. And I only made one slight variation, which was to reduce some of the sugar. But I used the brown sugar mix that Splenda likes to put out, which is half Splenda and half real brown sugar, because you need something that is going to caramelize. You need to do that. But I was sort of stunned at the recipe, which I thought at the first, oh boy, this is really a little bit too much. It's a half a pound of butter and 8 ounces of cream cheese. And I thought, well, that's an awful lot. But after I got it cooked, after I made it, that and 2 cups of flour, after I put all that together, I realized that I had really made very much like a shortbread that I'd learned to make in Scotland, which is a lot of butter and a little bit of flour and a lot of powdered sugar and the flour. And it cooks up into a very short bread, you know, one that will crumble and fall apart when you eat it.
Yeah.
And the other thing was that after you make this recipe, you roll it out into an 11-inch circle, and you cut that into 16 pieces. Well, you end up with 2 circles, you got 32 pieces. That's a whole lot of stuff. And it lasted for a long time. In fact, I think finished the last piece day before yesterday. Other people came and munched away at it, and it seemed to be very good. I was pleased with the texture. I had not thought that the texture would be as interesting and pleasant as it was.
Now, does this give you a flaky kind of a thing that it puts you in mind of a croissant or a crescent roll?
No,
it doesn't.
It gives you very close to Mexican wedding cookies, Irish, Russian tea cookies, not dolmades, kurumbriades, the Greek cookie, which is a lot of butter and a little bit of flour and some sugar and stuff. So it was very much like, so I was pleased that, I had never put that much cream cheese in with anything to make a dough. And it was very, very easy to do. I'll give the recipe later. I've got someone to talk to.
Yes, we do. In Champagne, we'll go right there. Line number one. Hello.
Hey, hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Doyle.
Hello.
I'm one of your ex-students. Well, I'm still one of your students. But we just got these 2 great vegan cookbooks.
Oh.
And we've been vegetarian here for a long time.
Yes.
But what that means is we just eat spaghetti every day. we got a book called Veganomicon and another one called The Garden of Vegan that's got these...
Oh, that sounds neat.
These 2 ladies who are dressed up really nicely on the cover, but they're covered with tattoos. It's it's hysterical. But the first thing I made was it's some kind of lentil and cauliflower curry. And
oh, my.
Yeah, with the orange lentils or red lentils.
Yes.
They're called. And I had never made anything like that before, and it turned out perfectly the first time. Red lentil cauliflower curry.
Cauliflower, yes.
And I had to go to the store and buy all the new spices and everything like that, but it turned out fantastic.
Did you see, was that then just as a dish, or did you use rice and add other things to it later?
Yeah, we didn't know. After it was done, we weren't sure what to do, so we made some brown rice and put it on top of that.
That would be good to do, although I believe, well, no, I take it back. That depends on where you are. If you're in the northern part of the country, you'll have chapatis or roti, and if you're in the south part of the country, you have rice.
Well,
so it would have been, it probably could have been either way.
Yeah, we made spiced pita chips.
Oh, good, good. That sounds neat.
Yeah, that was just fantastic.
So this will be a whole new episode of cooking for you.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other thing that I've tried so far was using nutritional yeast to make cheese sauce.
Oh.
Which sounds really gross.
It sounds peculiar, but...
Yeah. Oh, it's really great. You use a whole lot. It's like 3/4 cup of nutritional yeast. So I had to go, locate that at the store.
Yeah.
Like a 1/4 cup of flour, and the only oil you use is like 1/4 tablespoon of olive oil something like that. It was pretty amazing. And then 2 cups of bouillon.
Hmm. Well, it is, I think what you are discovering is that sometimes the things that are so complex sounding and so complex tasting are really very simple to put together, and especially if you're dealing with probably other than the United States kitchen, you'll find that a lot of people have developed techniques for ease of cooking. I do know that I remember just being completely knocked out that somebody built a fire with 4 little sticks of wood and boiled the tea and then stomped the fire out. And, it was there and then it was gone. And there was no evidence that cooking had been done. and it served us then the hot tea. And I was very surprised that, gee, whatever happened to all the fuss of running into the kitchen and turning this on, the gas is going, flames are all, and that's, 4 or 5 little sticks.
That sounds like a very informal tea practice.
It was very informal, but it was very much a part of these people's techniques. So you'll find that there's a lot of shortcuts that certain traditions have put into their food, and that's kind of fun to find out.
Great. Well, I love listening to your program. So.
Oh, well, good. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Now, see, that's the idea. What we're interested in is hearing some stories from people about food things that are new. Maybe that would be a good way of putting it. Maybe you've made something recently that just for you, this was completely new, and you thought, gosh, this is great. Why wasn't I doing this before?
Well, exactly.
Or maybe that is your plan. That is, you said, you looked at the kinds of things that you're eating. You're saying, boy, we're just having the same things, and we want to have something new. Try something new. It's always good to try something new, particularly if you're trying to, get in touch with different tastes you're not all that familiar with. For example, maybe you haven't done a lot of cooking in the Indian style.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly lots of good cookbooks. In fact, back in December, we don't usually talk about food, but with you. But we did have I had a nice conversation with a woman who is an Indian cook, has authored a couple of cookbooks, and teaches Indian cooking.
Yes,
and it got me thinking more and more about how I really like those flavors, and I don't do them very often at home. So maybe that's one of the things I'm trying to do.
And in Indian cooking, they're very right there. It isn't something that you have to spend a long time doing. It's really what I was referring to, was experiences that I had in India with eating.
Yeah.
the stuff is right there, and you're making it, and it's done, and it's instant, and how can it be this complex? Well, yeah. Find out.
One of the things that I thought was interesting, we talked about the way that spices are used.
Yes.
And how the fact that in different combinations, the classic spices that they use will give you different results, and it's different depending on whether you add them in the beginning, you add them at the end. Some recipes call for you to take the spices and fry them.
Yes.
And fry them whole and then
grind them up. Yes.
And put them in. And it's a very different each different approach to working with them is going to give you a different result. And one of the things that I said to her in the beginning of the show, I said, now, if we go into a kitchen in India, I said, if we go into a kitchen here in the United States, probably in a lot of people's cabinets, there are going to be a jar of something called curry powder.
Yes.
And I said, now, if we go into an Indian kitchen, are we going to find a jar of curry powder? And of course, she said, no, you don't. That Indian cooks have a collection of things, individual elements, and every dish takes those and combines them in maybe slightly different ways. So you would recognize those flavors, but that's that way then every dish doesn't taste like every other dish, which it would if you just put curry powder and everything. I mean, curry powder's fine, but if you take it apart and you blend those things in different ways, then you're going to get a much wider palette of flavors.
Well, curry powder, as you're describing it, was invented for the English to take home in a packet, and so it was a strange blend that was put together, and then of course that isolates it. You can't get these changes. You can have a little or a lot. And so if you eat some of the curry things, which are very, very good with curry powder, I like them, they won't taste the same as if you were making them in another traditional technique.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk with someone else in Urbana now. Line one. Hello.
Would the lady call back and give the recipe for the red lentil cauliflower curry?
Oh, well, maybe she will.
Perhaps we should have asked. I'm sorry. I should have done this. Well, if she's still listening, she can call back and would give us the recipe. Sure.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Again, other questions, comments, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Was there another recipe that you...
There's another recipe that I am going to do, and it interests me because I like making pies, especially savory pies, as something. And you can have them cold, and then you can have them for several days. And the making of the crust, I have tried and tried. And tried and tried, and everyone, oh, no, you do it this way. Oh, no, you do it that way. Yes, I understand all the techniques, but somebody is not telling me something. And so I have of recent given up and said, fine, Mr. Pillsbury, you can make my crust, which I do not mind. I don't mind it, except I still, as one who gets in and cooks, I still like the idea of maybe I can do this. Other people are. Why can't I?
Yeah.
Well, a gracious friend gave me a subscription to the Cooks Illustrated magazine.
It's a very nice magazine.
Oh, I'll say. And so here on my first issue is a foolproof pie dough. And one thing that I like about Cooks Illustrated, it very much like Alton Brown. They deal with the scientific things that happen and that they can predict then what is going to be needed or how you failed or whatever it was. She has a recipe in here which I am very anxious to try called a foolproof pie dough. It is not complicated. It is straightforward, but boy, is it peculiar. Do you a quarter of a cup of vodka? And a quarter of a cup of ice water.
Okay, the ice water I can see, because you want to keep the dough is supposed to be really cold.
Well, something happens. What she points out and why she used vodka. Vodka is 40%, let's see, vodka is, she's got 40% ethanol and 60% water. Therefore, you cut down the amount of water. And the water in a pie dough makes a gluten, which then makes the pie dough tough. But if 40% of that is alcohol, gluten will not form an alcohol. And so she has made a recipe that is flaky and is tender. And God bless her, it will roll out without cracking and peeling and all of that sort of stuff. I'll give it to you real quick.
That's interesting.
And I'll also give you some information. Cooks Illustrated, www.cooksillustrated.com will also have the recipe. And in it, they have the recipe for making a single crust. One I want to give you rather quickly is for making a double crust. 2.5 cups of flour and 1 teaspoon of salt and only 2 tablespoons of sugar. Then 1.5 sticks of cold unsalted butter that you cut up into 1/4-inch slices, and then 1/2 cup of cold vegetable shortening cut into about 4 pieces, and then 1/4 of a cup of cold vodka and 1/4 of a cup of cold water. But now it's the processing that makes the difference, and this is what she found out. If you do this and you do it too much, that doesn't work. If you do this, you don't do it enough, it doesn't work. So the first thing you do is you mix all of the fat and half of the flour. And she wants to do it in a Cuisinart. Mm-hmm. So it is all of the fat, which was 1.5 sticks of cold butter and 1/2 cup of vegetable shortening, and then 1 1/4 cups of flour. And that is zipped together until it just looks like cottage cheese. And what she's talking about is that you get some of the flour and some of the butter taken care of, and then you add more flour. You add the rest of the flour after you've done that first processing, and it goes rather quickly. And then you dump all that into another dish and sprinkle over the water and the vodka, and then start using a folding technique with a spatula until that it all of the moisture gets worked into it. And then again, the thing where you want to hydrate the flour by leaving it out, you make it into two balls and flatten them into a disc and put them in the refrigerator for 45 minutes. And I thought, well, now, if you feel that that's going to cut in on your working time, make them at night and have them in the morning.
Sure.
And because it wouldn't take very long to do that. And I thought, she is so convinced that this is such a foolproof recipe, I'm looking forward to trying it later this afternoon.
But now this, the nice thing I think about this magazine, this is the same folks who do the program that we have on TV called America's Test Kitchen.
America's Test Kitchen,
and
yes,
they when they take a recipe, they make it every possible way. They do every variation. They make it 100 times.
A hundred times. She said after she had made it, after finally she got what she thought was the right recipe, she says after 114 tries, she believes that she has this recipe.
So they do.
So I'm
all
looking
that,
forward to doing that.
And generally, I have used this magazine over the years, and I have made some things out of it. And I think it's really great instructional, but also when they say, now we've done, this is the way to do it because we've tried every possible way and made it wrong, every way we can make it wrong in order to find the way that it will come out right. So I think if they say this works, I would.
That's why I'm attracted to it, and it's new information for me.
And I'm sure that the alcohol cooks away when you cook it.
So somewhat. But the point is, I think the thing is, it is a moisture that does not create the extra gluten, which takes away the flakes, et cetera.
Okay. Yeah. All right. If they say it works.
That's why I can hardly wait.
We do have the first caller back with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Got your book?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Okay, red lentil dash cauliflower curry.
Yes.
Okay, so here's there's a huge list of stuff. 3 tablespoons of grapeseed or peanut oil.
Mm-hmm.
1 large onion chopped. Now, I never actually I'm going to ask you questions about these things because I don't. When they say a large onion, what does that mean? One that fits in your hand or?
Well, a big one. Not just fits in your hand, but it is probably 4 inches across,
and
3.5 to 4 inches across.
Yellow or white?
That makes no difference.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then continuing, 1 large chili pepper. It says jalapeno or serrano.
Yeah.
2 large shallots. That was another scary thing. I had never used shallots before.
Well, they're very small. They're about the size of a walnut, and you get them in a package of about 10 or 12.
And
then you peel them and chop them up. But they're a lighter taste of onion than that. Yeah.
All right. Then 1 1/2 inch piece of fresh ginger, peeled and grated. Then, okay, now here's the big question. 1 large parsnip, peeled and chopped.
Yes.
I had to actually look that up on the Internet.
What, a parsnip?
When you open a parsnip, I read somewhere that there's like some kind of thing inside of it that you have to chop out.
There is a core. Now, in my parsnip cooking, I never knew about taking the core out of the parsnip. Just last week, I saw a description of this, and yes, a parsnip is very much like a big white carrot, and you cut it in half, then you cut it in quarters, and then it's easy enough to cut that core out. I never bothered cutting the core out, so I don't really know the virtues of yes, but I assume that since you and I have become two different sources of that, maybe that is something that you do, is cut the core out. So it'd be very simple. Cut it in quarters and then just cut it out. It would, leaving some isn't going to be the difference.
Okay. All right. That's good. Mm-hmm. All right. So then we're into the spices now.
Yes.
Two teaspoons of curry powder. So I listened a little bit, and I guess we should put that in quotes. Half a teaspoon of turmeric.
Turmeric, yes.
Half a teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
Half a teaspoon of ground cumin. Half a teaspoon of ground coriander. Okay, so then 1.5 cups of red lentils.
1.5 cups.
Of red lentils.
Red lentils.
And then 4 cups of vegetable broth or water.
And 4 cups of broth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then 1.5 to 2 pounds of cauliflower.
1.5 to 2 pounds, yes.
Cauliflower trimmed and sliced into small florets. 2 tablespoons of chopped fresh cilantro.
2 big teas of cilantro, yes.
And then 2 tablespoons of lime juice.
And two tablespoons?
Of lime juice.
Of lime
juice.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, 1.5 teaspoons of salt.
1.5 teas of salt, yes.
Yeah, so it says to sauté the onions and shallots until tender and translucent, 5 to 7 minutes. Then you add the grated ginger and chili and sauté for 1 minute. This is very, very precise here. Add spices and briskly stir-fry for 30 seconds.
Yes.
Then add the parsnip and stir-fry for another minute. Then you add the broth and the lentils. Cover the pot, raise the heat to high, boil for 1 minute. And then stir the mixture, and then cover the pot and lower the heat to medium-low and allow the lentils to simmer for 10 to 12 minutes.
Or maybe even a little longer.
They take about
35 minutes to cook. But they don't take as long as beans.
Well, lentils. The thing is, they want you to add the cauliflower.
And cook some more.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So 10 to 12 minutes and then add the cauliflower.
Okay.
Then 20 to 25 minutes.
That sounds a lot better.
Yeah. So you know, the whole thing, the last time I made this, I think I had it on the stove for at least an hour or two.
Yep.
And then they tell you to remove the heat and stir in the chopped cilantro, lime juice, and salt.
That'll do it. It's at the tail end, yes. You acidulate it and put the cilantro in. You don't cook that. Yep.
Yeah, and then it says not to eat it for 15 minutes.
If you can stand that thought. The taste would meld together very, very much. That sounds very good. Let's see. Turmeric, cumin, coriander, and cinnamon. Was there cinnamon?
Yeah, it was cinnamon.
That I find unusual, but I like the idea.
Yeah. Oh, it's really good. You can smell it, too. The next day I opened it up and smell the cinnamon.
That's what it is, yeah. Now, turmeric, you have to be careful with it. If you put too much of that in, it's always used for vegetables, but if you put too much of it in, it'll be bitter.
Oh.
So be careful. Don't just throw the turmeric in. Put in the measured amount.
Oh,
that's good.
That's good to know.
Well, it's fast.
Cool.
So red lentils and cauliflower.
The other caller didn't want to know the cheesy sauce with the nutritional yeast.
No, he just asked about the cover.
He was interested in red lentils and cauliflower.
All right.
So I've got it written down here, and we will make sure that we have that in our recipe file.
Oh, how cool.
Thanks a lot.
That's great. All right. Well, thank you. Yes, we will indeed have someone. We have a volunteer who's been very graciously spending time transcribing recipes from the shows. And so now on our website, we have a lot of recipes. And I'm not sure when we will get this on, but we will get that on there. So if you just go to will.illinois.edu, go to AM, go to Focus 580, go to links, I think that's it. And now we have a whole bunch of recipes from past programs. And we're really glad to have them on there because from time to time people have said, well, it'd be really nice to have the recipes on the website. And we said, yeah, it would. We'd really like to do that, too. It's just a matter of finding someone who has the time to be able to do it.
Well, what I love is that we may be talking about something and make reference to a former recipe that, you know, from several programs before. And the next thing you know, one of the staff members comes in bringing a copy that they've just run off the machine.
Yeah. So there are many recipes there. You can take a look at them. And as soon as we can, I'm sure we'll get the recipes from this time round on there too. And if you would like to call in and give us a recipe, we said at the beginning that, well, it's the beginning of the year. People make resolutions, and maybe you have some food-related resolutions. So either there is something that you've said, I have this thing, I have never made this before, but this year I'm going to try making it. And the other thing that Doyle said, well, maybe perhaps there is something that you have just recently made new, that is new to you. You had never made it before, and it turned out really well. As this first caller
yes.
said, well, yes, I made this great curry with lentils and cauliflower, and so she shared the recipe, and we'll have that on there, and maybe somebody else will give us one too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I think I, like you, have tried and given up on pie crust a long time ago. It just wasn't doing it, and I just said, I have other things to do. And I think, and I know now, if I knew then what I know now, I know now that I think one of my problems was that I was working the dough
too much. Yes, that's
a
big one.
And didn't quite understand the fact you can't work it too much, and you got to keep all the components cold before you start, keep everything, you know, make it up and then put it again in the fridge to keep it cold. Don't mess around with it too much.
Right.
That's another
secret of it. Well, with the help of a Xerox, you'll have this recipe before I go.
Well, what month?
December.
Is this? Oh, all right. Well, we probably have it at our house. I would imagine.
Pears on the front.
The covers all look alike to me pretty much. Let's talk with somebody else here in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to add two comments. First of all, I really enjoy listening to your show. I'm glad I'm off today.
Good.
First of all, you're the second person within 2 weeks that I've heard about the vodka in the pie crust. I was about to say I'm never making a pie crust again. I've had it.
Exactly.
It's awful. Everybody eats the
exactly.
filling, and that's it.
It probably comes from the same magazine. Because
yeah, well,
they were the ones that invented this.
Mm-hmm. Well, sounds great. Well, I'm going to try that next time. Another thing, I cook a lot of Indian food, and one of the things that I've discovered I don't have any secrets except for if you grind your own cumin and your own coriander, it makes a world of difference.
Oh yes, you get it as the seed.
Yes.
And then, now do you heat it before you grind it?
I don't because when I do things, I like to do it pretty quickly. You're right, it does change the
well,
taste.
Well, it may change the taste. That's why I'm calling, that's why I'm asking you, is that I'm never convinced that that makes that much difference, but I do know if you believe in doing that and you do it, then it will, you will feel that a difference has been made. Mm-hmm. I often don't. Just really know. Some of my recipes use the whole seeds, and some of them use the powder. And you do, in the style of cooking that I do, you do have to heat it up, but you don't necessarily have to always grind them, and that there are whole seeds sometimes left in the food.
If I have a recipe that calls for whole cumin seeds,
yes.
I always heat them in the pan beforehand, and then you add everything else.
Yes, yes.
But I have a garam masala recipe. I think I don't remember where I got it from. It was on the radio, and you toast everything, you know, just
oh, yes.
lightly. Oh, and it is out of this world. I'm getting hungry already.
Yes, and you know you can get hungry just thinking about, especially well, Indian food. The whole house is aromatized. Is that
uh-huh.
the word I want to use?
I'm not sure that
well,
is a word, but
walk down the street and they say, "Oh,
I can smell you cooking." It will work, and it doesn't seem to stick around and become offensive. It's sort of ooh, what a nice perfume that is. Yeah, I love it. That's good. Thank you.
Well, thanks
Thank
for the call.
Thank you very much.
Others are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Now, see, I have done that with mostly with cumin.
Yes.
Taking the whole seeds, toasting them in a dry skillet, then grinding them, and And I would say, for my taste, it is different. It's a more nutty kind of
that would be the best way to describe
thing.
It. You're right.
Yes,
it changes it
does
that way.
Change it. It does change.
It's just not a raw taste. It is a nutty taste. Yeah.
And I think both ways. I think cumin is one of my favorite things.
Oh, I really
yeah, like the taste.
I do too.
And either way, it's good, but it is different somehow. And I think that when you toast it and grind it, it actually it concentrates or intensifies the flavor. And I think you actually have to be a little careful because not only does it develop that nuttiness, I think there's just a slight sort of bitter edge to it. So I think you have to be
You're releasing the oils.
Careful, yeah. I think myself, I end up thinking that I need less of it.
Yes.
Than if I'm just buy it ground already ground, which is great, which is fine, and I use it a lot that way too. But I think it is different. It is different.
Well, I love to cook with it.
Let's talk with some other folks here. Urbana Line 3. Hello.
Hi, Doyle. This is Judy McCullough. Happy New Year.
Well, hello, Judy.
Hi. I have a foolproof pie crust recipe for you.
All right.
And this is from my mother, Edna Binkley. My parents, you may remember, operated Northmore Apple Orchard. Just then it was just outside Peoria.
Oh, yes.
Now it's Old Orchard Subdivision. At any rate, I have never had this one to fail, and it's very straightforward. It's very tender.
Yes.
And what makes it different is that there's an egg and some cider vinegar.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Yes.
So,
good.
This is what goes into the crust. This makes enough for two pies, 9 or 10 inch pies, the top and the bottom crust.
Oh, two crust pies. Okay.
Yeah, two crust pies. 3 cups of flour.
Mm-hmm.
One teaspoon of salt.
Teaspoon of salt, yes.
And mix that up. You cut in 1 cup of shortening.
1 cup. Okay.
And then you mix together 1 egg beaten, mm-hmm. 1 tablespoon of cider vinegar.
A tablespoon of cider, yes.
And 5 tablespoons of cold water.
5 big teas of water.
Or if you need that.
Mm-hmm.
And you blend that into the flour mixture.
Oh, all right, yes.
And that's all it is. And it makes enough for 2 pies. The dough, you can keep it for a few days in your refrigerator, and you can also freeze it. So if you make 1 pie, top and bottom
yes,
crust,
and then you save
you
some
take
more.
The rest of it, form it into 2 patties. Keep that for a few days in the refrigerator or freeze it and then take it out when you need it, and there you are.
That's very good. Now, I'm empathizing with this recipe. I kind of know it, and I've kind of I've always held off of this. The addition of the egg and the vinegar is very Scots.
Really?
The Scotch meat pies. I would ask the butcher, well, what do you do? Oh, you have to have an egg and you have to have the vinegar. Oh, I'd never heard of that. I didn't know what to do, but I've never really found the recipe, but I do know that gives it gives a basis, and everything else sort of fits into it. But the egg and the cider vinegar, yes, is very much from Scotland.
Well, where she got this, I don't know. She traded apples sometimes for recipes and for peaches and rag rugs and all sorts of other
things. Oh, goodness, yes.
But there was such a German population up there, and my family was out of Amish Mennonite
background. Oh, yes.
A lot of Germans up around Peoria, but she might have got it from some Scot.
Well,
or
a traveling Scotsman found it from Germany.
That could be.
Which is just as possible. Oh, well, that's good. Well, I've got that. I've written that down.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Try.
I will.
Okay.
I know the egg and the cider vinegar. Vinegar does do something. In fact, this magazine says they wanted to try vinegar and they wanted to try lemon juice. but then it went wrong. It made it too mm-hmm. sour. So she said, mm. no, can't do that. Can't use that. So but I do know, I'm always sort of surprised that you would put egg into a pie crust. And I always hold back on that. But I do know that when I was in Scotland, I learned to do that. I didn't make it, but I learned about it.
Okay. We have about 10 minutes left.
Oh, my.
In this part of Focus 580, it's the first Wednesday, and for a long time it's been a pleasure to have here Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence, and we talk about food and cooking. And this time around he said, well, it's the beginning of a new year, so maybe you're thinking about trying to do something new in the kitchen. Your resolution is, we're going to break out of what we've been doing, as good as all of that might be, and make some new things. Or maybe his suggestion was, well, maybe indeed recently you have made some new thing, something that is new to you, to your kitchen, and to your taste, and you thought that it was really good. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we have some other folks here. And next, we will talk with someone in Champaign, and line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't know. You've moved on now, but I wanted to make a couple of clarifications about the spices for Indian cooking.
Oh, yes.
And one of them is absolutely yes. We grind our coriander and our cumin, and we keep fresh, you know, the spices fresh. You don't have to do it with every meal, but you grind them once a month or so. But there's a big difference in using them when they're heated and then they're using them plain. And in dishes, you use the powder, coriander, and the cumin along with the turmeric, and you stir it in the hot oil very quickly, and then you put in all the food. But if you roast the spices and then grind them, that's what makes garam masala.
Mm.
And that's usually used as something to flavor the food. At the very end, you put a pinch in, and you really don't overcook it. So there's a difference.
Oh, that would make a difference, too. It's not.
Yes, the roasted spices taste different from the spices that are just fresh ground and put into the food.
Mm.
And the last thing is, especially with cumin, it can be used whole, and then you put it into hot oil, you let it spatter, and then let the oil spatter.
Oh, yes. That's the way I cook it.
The vegetables, and that gives yet another flavor. So there are all these subtleties in what is, you know,
I always put black mustard seeds in with that.
Black mustard seeds and cumin are a wonderful combination.
Yes.
And you can toss potatoes in. I have a recipe where I put sesame seeds, black mustard seed, cumin, and you let the oil spatter, and then you put in pre-cooked potatoes with a little bit of, very little turmeric. You were right. Turmeric has to be used sparingly.
Sparingly.
Yeah, with the turmeric. And you put in, at the very end, lemon juice and some cayenne. And they turn out wonderfully.
Sounds great.
Okay, so I just wanted to make that distinction between the ground spices and the whole spices.
Well, good. That's a great help. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Now, if you're messing with turmeric, now you got to be very careful.
Yeah.
Because if you get it on you, on your clothes, it's never coming out.
Or if you get it on your sink top.
Yes,
it stains everything.
If you had some turmeric with some oil, you get an oil turmeric stain, you might as well just dye whatever it is yellow, because it's not coming
You're
out.
You're right.
Let's talk with someone in Urbana, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of apple pie, but I can't, because of the fat in the pastry, I can't afford to eat that frequently. And I've also been a fan of Austrian-style apple strudel, which I first had 30 years ago when I went to Austria as a student. And I was intimidated for 30 years to try to make the dough, because this is a pulled dough that you get out very, very thin, paper thin, and then you roll up the apples inside the dough. But a year ago in a visit to Austria, I saw a demonstration, and I decided this is something that one can learn. And I've had a great deal of fun doing this. The beauty of this is that it's just flour, one egg, a tablespoon of canola oil, so that the pastry wrapping the apple filling is almost fat-free.
Oh, I see, yes.
And so now that I've gotten the hang of this, I keep a strudel on hand all the time. I can eat it for breakfast pastry, or I can serve it as a dessert.
Oh, that's very good.
With whipped cream on the side. And it actually is very, very simple. The dough is 2 cups of flour,
2 cups,
half cup of warm water, 1 egg, tablespoon of canola oil, and I put that in my KitchenAid. I just use all-purpose flour, white flour, and I put the dough hook on and let it go for 15 minutes.
Oh, is that right? Okay, 15
minutes. And then
minutes.
I put it in a small bowl covered with oil,
mm-hmm.
and just let it rest, and it doesn't matter. You can come back a couple of hours later or whenever it's convenient because there's no yeast. It's not rising.
Yes.
And then you have a dough that's very soft and elastic. It's like a rubber band. And I made a board that is about 32 by 24. Cover that with a white cloth that's floured.
Yes.
And then I just start pulling it.
And it really works.
It really works. And it's paper thin. You get it to the four corners.
Yeah.
It takes so many apples. This takes about 3 pounds of apples.
Oh, my, yes.
I had to buy my little apple peeler device so I wouldn't spend an hour peeling apples. And then the filling is just apples. Only a half cup of sugar to 3 pounds of apples.
Oh, that's good.
Not very much.
Yes.
And then my little American twist is to take dried cranberries, about a half or three-quarters
oh,
cup.
Oh, good,
and
yes.
And some rum.
Yeah. Oh, that too.
And mix that in with the apples. And then you just start on the long side where it's about 32 inches long and get your apples there. And then you use the cloth to start rolling it
and
up.
The cloth. Oh, that's right. That's the secret.
And you roll it. And then you've got about three layers of the thin pastry when you get it all rolled up. And because it's so long, it's a little bit awkward. In my oven, I have to turn it into a horseshoe on a baking sheet.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask what shape you use that. Yeah.
I mean, if you had commercial ovens, you know, you could do it straight.
Oh, just leave it long. Okay.
I do it in one piece, and I just have an oversized baking sheet and make it into a horseshoe shape. It actually, once it's rolled up, even though that pastry is very, very thin, it also is very elastic. It doesn't tear that easily.
Hmm.
And it's not that hard to, once you get the hang of it, to move it around. And I've loved this stuff. I never get tired of it. And it's hard to find here. Mirabelle, the baker there, makes it occasionally. You get lucky.
Oh, yes.
He makes a very, very good strudel.
Yes.
Otherwise, I don't know who makes it around here. But it's a fun recipe. You can find instructions online if you Google, you know, apple strudel.
Oh, yes.
Or pulled apple strudel doughs, and they're all very similar, and it's not that hard once you start playing with it.
I've always been puzzled by that because it seemed to be so mysterious, because I'm relating some sort of my own dough experiences with these pictures of the women that cover the whole table with a cloth and flour, and they're all pulling and stretching. I say, you can't do that. I don't care what you say. You can't do that.
I think part of the secret is... you know, I put it in a very small mixing bowl.
Yes.
And I have it coated with oil and just coated the top with oil. It comes out of there. It's so supple. I mean, it really, it does want to stretch. And so sometimes I'll get it, you know, pulled about halfway, and then I'll work with my other ingredients, get the cinnamon and sugar and so on in my apples, and then it'll come back and pull again.
Well, you see, you sort of given me a clue here. You've mixed it for a long period of time. 15 minutes is a long time, and you have indeed made a lot of glutens, and so they're going to be stretchier. And then when you let it sit for a long period of time, you're hydrating the flour, and it is also going to allow that to stretch. So you put two stretchabilities into it, and that made it. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to learn that difference. Good. That's neat. Well, thanks a lot.
Well, thanks very much. We appreciate that. Let's see if we can get maybe one more person at least, and this would be in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I found a recipe for a sugar-free and crustless pumpkin pie in the IGA.
Oh, my.
Circular before Christmas, and I tried it.
Yes.
And it was pretty good, though. I would, in the future, either add some molasses or make some of the sugar brown.
Mm-hmm.
But here are the ingredients. It's 1 12-ounce can of non-fat evaporated milk.
1 12-ounce non-fat.
Right. Yes. 3/4 cup granulated sugar substitute.
3/4 cup, yes.
That would be Splenda.
Mm-hmm.
1/2 teaspoon ground ginger.
1/2 a little tea of ginger, yes.
1 teaspoon cinnamon.
One big tea. Oh, no, a little tea.
Oh, 1 teaspoon.
Cinnamon.
They have half cup of egg substitute, but I just use 2 eggs.
Mm-hmm. 2 eggs.
And then 1 can of pumpkin, which they did not define. So I had a can in my fridge, but I also had some fresh pumpkin, and I used 2 cups of fresh cooked pumpkin.
Okay, 2 cups.
I also put in some allspice and just one little nutmeg. I looked at my traditional pumpkin pie recipe, and they have a translation between pumpkin pie spice and doing it by the spice.
Oh, yes.
And I used more spices than they called for here. I think I put in, I don't know, maybe quarter teaspoon cloves and...
Oh, yes, add some cloves. I would like that.
Yeah, and I think I put in maybe half a teaspoon of allspice and maybe about a quarter teaspoon of nutmeg, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly because I didn't write it down. And then it says to preheat the oven to 425. Oh, well, before we go further, if I were to do it again, I would take probably make that granulated sugar substitute into half a cup and do then the equivalent of a quarter cup of the brown sugar.
Oh, yes.
Blend a mix. Or I would add maybe a tablespoon of molasses.
Molasses, that would be good.
Because it didn't have any brown sugar taste. And it wasn't very sweet, so a little more sugar, sweetener in it wouldn't hurt. And they have you mixing the sugar substitute and the spices, then beating the egg or egg substitute in a bowl, stirring in the pumpkin and sugar and spice mixture, and then the evaporated milk, and then bake it in a well-greased 9-inch glass pie dish. Ceramic works also. And you bake for 50 minutes at 425 and then turn down the oven to 350 and bake an additional 45 to 50 minutes.
Okay, there you are.
So that actually turned out to be a little long. It was a little overdone, but...
I'm going to have to jump in on you. I'm really sorry, but I'm at the end. We're going to have to... I got to go.
All right. I'm finished. Thank you.
I appreciate the recipe. And to everybody else who called, we'll see if we can get as many of these as we can on the website. And we'll do it all again next month.
A crustless pumpkin pie. Great.
That's very interesting. We've actually talked about this in our house, the possibility of doing that. We'll have to think more about that. Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
The man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. First one Wednesday of every month, he's here. We talk about cooking. These programs, by the way, made possible by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Wacky Nackies, Prairie Fire Glass, Be Active Toys, Any Frequency Music, all housed on the same street in downtown Monticello. We're going to break for news and update on the markets. We'll be back, so please stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. We're in the corn pit at mid-session today. We have already seen futures at fresh 11-year highs following a surge to record highs in crude oil and gold as the dollar value falls. U.S. corn market hit that 11-year high of 469.25. As crude oil hit $99 in the spot contract, and spot gold hit $855.10 an ounce.